This is KCUR 89.3. On this, the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, we're looking at the reaction to the shooting in Kansas City. It came slower here, but by the time the three-day disturbances were over, six people had died, hundreds were injured, and there was property damage in the millions. KCUR's Laura Ziegler reports on what it was like for some who lived through it.
There was a feeling among some that Kansas City might avoid the violence and destruction that had erupted in other cities across the country after Dr. King's assassination. But by the night of Tuesday, April 9th, it was clear that was a dire miscalculation.
I, Alice W. Davis, mayor of Kansas City, do hereby declare and determine that due to mob action and civil disobedience, a state of emergency exists within the city of Kansas City, Missouri.
So why did Mayor Ilas Davis feel it was so important to take such drastic measures? Well, it started with high school students who wanted to remember Dr. King. On the day of Dr. King's funeral, 5 days after he was killed, schools in Kansas City, Kansas, canceled classes. But in Kansas City, Missouri, the school board and the police department felt it would be better to have students in class and off the streets. Michael Ali was a student at the almost all-black Central High School at the time.
And after they announced it on the PA system, everybody just left. People, kids were crying and disrupting everything. I think it happened around 9 o'clock.
Police had already arrived at Central to try and keep the students in. Students from Lincoln and Manual High Schools joined those from Central as they began to march downtown. Michael Ali was in the middle of it.
From Linwood in Indiana all the way to, 31st and Woodland, we were tearing up everything in path, throwing rocks at cars, and every time we seen some white people, it was on because we knew they had done this to Martin Luther King.
Within about an hour, the school board reversed itself and dismissed school. But it was too late. Kansas City Police Chief Clarence Kelly had been meeting with black community leaders, clergy, and elected officials. WDAF filed a report.
At this time, Chief Kelly says he cannot say that the situation actually is cooling off, and the number of hit-and-run attacks, attempting to set fires, and attempting to loot.
And in response, Kelly increased the police presence to over 1,000. Reverend David Fly was a young white priest at Grace and Holy Trinity Cathedral who joined the students at 19th and Paseo.
As we walked along, there were police cars in every cross street. Police already were wearing tear gas masks. There were a couple of dogs out and available to them. The tension was growing.
At Truman Road in Paseo, they met up with a barricade of law enforcement officers.
And we were standing with the our clubs in that, no, don't come past me position.
Clarence Gibson was a young white officer with less than a year on the force.
And as far as you can see between Truman and Paseo were inner city students coming towards us from like one curve to the other curve. And it was scary. We want to go downtown. We want to go downtown. Then Mayor Ilas Davis showed up. Fellas, open up, let them go downtown.
Reverend Fly says by that time, the young people had acted on their own.
People broke through the cordon of police officers, and it just went wild. They were running down I-70 traffic, zooming along on I-70.
There was already a big crowd listening to speeches on the steps of City Hall. Hundreds of others milled around 12th Street and in the grassy areas between City Hall and the county courthouse. Maurice Copeland, a 20-year-old black Vietnam vet, remembers the tension when some of the protesters wanted to leave.
We were right at the police perimeter that had us surrounded, and the police wouldn't say a word. They stood arm in arm in their riot shields, everything that they had.
Clarence Gibson was part of that line, and he remembers being taunted by a woman.
You white boys out here, all the brothers in Vietnam getting killed, and you guys out here messing with the community, which was no big deal. I'm thinking, lady, half the guys here, we're all Vietnam veterans too, you know. And all of a sudden, a single soft drink bottle was thrown from somewhere behind her and landed in front of us. And next thing I heard was a little ping when you pull a pin on a gas grenade. Whoom! That whole block was just covered with gas.
There are different interpretations about what happened at that time. Some believe the tear gas came before the bottle was thrown. But at any rate, people scattered in all directions. Clergy had invited the young people to Holy Name Church at 23rd and Benton for a dance in an effort to de-escalate the tension. What's undisputed is that the police lobbed tear gas into the basement of that church, where the kids were pretty much trapped. Here's Maurice Copeland.
I wasn't 8 feet from the door, and they threw tear gas in there. And that's what really made people mad.
Over the next couple of days, there was indiscriminate burning, looting, and violence, most of it in the black community. The governor called in the National Guard. Military vehicles rolled down city streets. The disturbances that followed King's assassination in Kansas City were a response to long-term racial hostilities and institutionalized discrimination. Endemic steering by real estate agents perpetuated Jim Crow housing segregation. There was a lack of economic opportunity. 50 years out, Michael Ali has some misgivings about destroying his own community, but he says it all made sense at the time.
It is stupid to destroy your own community, but what you have to understand is we didn't own anything in that community. We didn't own none of it.
And then there was the issue of police relations with black communities. Some wondered if Kansas City could have avoided the violence, killing, and destruction altogether if police hadn't reacted so aggressively with tear gas and force against the black community. All those killed were black. Clarence Gibson says he saw some bad things from the 95% white police force he was part of.
This young kid's laying on the ground. I said, what the heck happened to him? Oh, he cut his head on that broken glass when he came out the window. I said, wait a minute. He was already out of the building standing up when I went around back. And this officer pulled his revolver out. He said he cut his head on this piece of glass here.
Some law enforcement officers also were hospitalized after facing rocks and sniper fire. But historian and author Sonny Gibson says the riots in Kansas City represented the voice of the black community saying they'd had enough.
No one was standing up saying we recognize all of this. And as a result of Dr. King being assassinated, it reached a point where it came out.
50 years later, some say not much has changed. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver arrived in Kansas City just months after the last embers of the riots had gone out. Now he sees more allies in the struggle for civil rights.
That's the America that a lot of people are trying to hold back, but it's coming and I think it's inevitable. Nobody's going to be able to hold it back.
But will this America be able to address the systemic problems so deeply rooted 50 years after Dr. King's assassination? Many in Kansas City's black communities remain unsure. Laura Ziegler, KCUR 89.3.